At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. In this episode, I'm doing something a little bit different. Over the past couple of weeks and months, I've had some really great conversations with a lot of different guests, and thank you to all of you for listening. Now, you might remember back in the day, I used to release highlight shows at the end of the month with all of the guests I'd had on and little clip shows of what they'd said for folks who maybe missed certain interviews, didn't quite want to listen to a certain guest, or maybe just missed it for whatever reason. Well, I've been doing it back on YouTube now for the last couple of months, and it's working out really well, and it's given folks a chance to catch up on highlights of interviews. Long story short, I'm taking the audio from those YouTube highlight shows, they're all like 10, 11, 12 minutes long, and putting them out for you on the audio shows. So I'll give you a little introduction before each clip, let's call it. They're all about, like I say, 10 minutes long, with the guest, who they are, and then it'll go straight into it. Now, because of the way the audio is clipped, it might sound a little bit random at times, but what you're going to get is chunks of the conversation from those episodes, some of the real key moments, and that's either good for you to go back and listen to the full interview, or you can just kind of listen to those clipped highlight shows. Anyway, let me know what you think of the format. If you think it needs any tweaks, I'm always open to feedback. Not that I'll necessarily act on it, but let me know, please. Yeah, always good to hear from you. So in this particular highlight show, you are going to hear from Kai Dickens, of course, documentary maker, who has just had her telepathy tape season 2 release. Dr. E.L. Whiteley, who is a space psychologist and director at the University College London Centre for Space Medicine. She was working with astronauts training and the psychology of spaceflight. Of course, Samuel Chong, a few weeks ago, a certified court interpreter and translator who helped bring the Teobao prophecy to English readers, discussing spirituality and extraterrestrial insights. That was a real interesting one. Daniel Sheehan, legendary civil rights attorney who is majorly involved in many UFO circles right now across the United States and beyond. Danny Sheehan joined me to discuss what's going on, the state of play for ufology, and what's happening behind closed doors in Washington. And Bryce Zabel, Hollywood writer, producer, and co-creator of Dark Skies. You may remember he co-authored a book also with Richard Dolan. And he is also a leading voice in UFOs and government transparency through the wonderful Need to Know podcast. So anyway, folks, let's get straight into it. And first up, we have Danny Sheehan. Danny Sheehan was with me a couple of weeks ago. Let's get right into the chat. And thank you very much for listening to this month's highlight show. We've had somewhat of a historic UAP hearing happen just a couple of weeks ago, and we're still seeing, I think, some of the fallout from it now.
Eric Burleson, Congressman Burleson, has kind of taken the lead on the UFO or UAP issue because Congresswoman Luna was kind of tied up on doing lots of the Jeffrey Epstein stuff that was kind of very hot. Going on. Jay has actually stated now that he has been physically in the presence of a confirmed non-human origin UFO. And he has actually seen with his own eyes the non-human beings that are connected with it. Well, the Jay apparently is not being authorized by the people above him to actually state. You know, this was coming back up again. As you know, back in 2023, we got 23 of the 64 pages in that basically directed the military services and the intelligence agencies to gather together all of the information they've ever had about UFOs since 1945 and present it as soon as possible to the National Archives. And so the timing of getting that film shown to the senators who were still on the brink, you know, who just couldn't quite believe that this was true because they were not being given that information directly by a person who has first hand experience with the non-human aircraft and with the non-human occupants. There's some units of our military and intelligence community that are in possession of one or more officially confirmed non-human origin extraterrestrial spacecraft, and that they are in possession of the non-human bodies that have been confirmed through DNA testing to be non-human. This is an extraordinarily strange chess game that is going on here between the executive branch and the Congress right now. No, not only that, but they're instructed to lie. You know, we encountered this when we were doing the Iran-Contra case back in the late 1980s. Oliver North came right before Congress and completely perjured himself, you know, lied. This is a very silly constitutional situation. Well, I say silly. It's a very serious constitutional situation here in our country, because it's absolutely clear that the Congress has the constitutional obligation to oversee these executive branches. The executive branch has now taken the position that they are the government and that the Congress of the United States are basically part-time employees that kind of come and go, but they're the permanent structure of the government. And what that's doing is just making it transparent to everyone that the national security state is insisting that it's in charge and not Congress. And they went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court at that time, back in 1974, you know, commanded the president to turn those records over. And of course, as soon as those records got turned over, it revealed that President Nixon was engaged in criminal unconstitutional conduct. This is a major test of all of our American institutions right now as to which of the branches of our government are entitled to this information. But the problem is the national security state is insisting that we are always in a state of war. We cannot have our country be in a permanent war footing in authorizing the President of the United States and his appointees in the executive branch to insist that they have war powers. Three Spanish-speaking guys came into the house of Durenberger, dragged his wife out of bed and put a gun in her mouth and threatened to kill her and the whole family if Durenberger didn't go get on the floor of the Senate and withdraw his demand for the investigation. And I've talked right directly face-to-face with one of the people that has been put in the crosshairs to be assassinated if he were to reveal the information that he's being forbidden to tell. So this is an extraordinarily serious constitutional situation that we face here. Well, you had one of the Air Force people, Dylan, he testified, very importantly, he testified about being in 2012, I believe it was, that he was at Langley Airfield outside of Washington, D.C., and he saw a 100 to 150 foot wide triangular craft rise up from the base. Based on everything that he has now learned in a classified way, that he was convinced that that was not a man-made craft, that that was a non-human origin craft, but that it was being flown by somebody directly from Langley Field. Okay, good. So you got a 150-foot craft kind of silently rose out of the ocean and flew across the top of your naval vessel, and you're a completely credible witness, the Air Force officer, that he basically told them right to their face about this extraordinary event of seeing a huge 100 to 150 foot triangle just rise right up off one of our military bases and fly right away. What we're trying to figure out is how do we get enough people in the House of Representatives and in the United States Senate to stop being afraid of the national security state people who are basically threatening them, not only threatening to kick them out of office by secretly funneling funds into against them, but threatening them physically. And if the agencies continue to be instructed to not comply with the order of Congress to turn over this information to the archives 4 days from now on September 30th, you know, we're going to see whether or not that is going to generate enough support inside the Senate and in the House to have enough of these individual members of the Congress dare to join together to confront the national security state over this.
And then where does that leave it?
Well, what that means is that the one last gasp thing that they have that they could do is they could that you could and Burleson has introduced into the House of Representatives a standalone bill. I believe that if you could put that onto the floor for a vote, out of the 435 members of the House, 400 of them would vote for that bill. And nobody on the Senate side, Mike Rounds, Chuck Schumer, none of them have been willing to put in a standalone bill for the UAP Disclosure Act. It's just an arbitrary and capricious exercise of his power. The members of the Congress and the House and Senate are failing to perform their constitutional obligation, and they need to be replaced. Yeah, this is a failure on the part of our constitutionally elected representatives to fulfill their constitutional obligation to exercise oversight authority over the executive branch. If it doesn't glance off of it, it appears to go through it in some strange way. You know, that I don't think Hellfire missiles are supposed to just go through something. When they hit something, they're supposed to explode and blow up what they're after. You know, I tend to favor getting as much information from as many different sources as you possibly can. And I think I have achieved that. I mean, you know, other than, you know, fighting cancer, right? You know, everybody will agree to that. But this potentially highly controversial issue, we have gotten support from the most extreme elements of both political parties and almost everybody in the middle. I've actually been in a room where AOC and Linda Taylor Greene are talking to each other, who are actually, you know, conversing in agreement that something ought to be done to get this information.
We're not in the best of shape as a species.
That they want to have the total of information that is available to all six of our United States military services, all 18 of our United States intelligence agencies, all 32 of our United States Defense Department agencies, and all of the private aerospace corporations that are in possession of this information about the UFO phenomenon and about the non-human intelligence that is deemed by everyone to be responsible for these UFOs, that they want that information delivered and put into the classified section of the National Archives. I think that, but on the other hand, it cannot be the national security state that is the one that is making the decision about how much of this information is to be released and when, okay? Because they've already displayed for 80 years what they're going to do. They're going to lie and dissemble and threaten and try to misuse the information to develop nuclear weapons delivery systems and propulsion systems for their fighter aircraft that we have to dig down and mobilize to raise up an aggression among our citizens that is comparable to the demand for the Jeffrey Epstein files. I believe that there's an element deep within the national security state infrastructure that had made a decision that they were willing to release some additional information, including the reality of not just the reality of the UFO phenomenon, but the reality that the UFO phenomenon is the product of some non-human intelligence. But the portion of the information I think that they're willing to reveal is the fact that there is, in fact, an extraterrestrial life. And they're very reluctant to acknowledge that they've been in direct communication with members of this extraterrestrial intelligence. And they're very reluctant to acknowledge that they've, in fact, been building a secret weapon system based upon the technology of the UFO people. The fact is, they're already here. They're already here. The evidence is abundant that they've been coming and going for some time. The key to this thing, the Senate Intelligence Committee is sitting on extraordinary information. We are not going to back down just because Congress this time around may not have been willing to do what we had hoped they would do.
That was Daniel Sheehan, folks. And next up, you're going to hear from Samuel Chong. Really interesting one. And I would say an interview that definitely took me outside of my own normal comfort zone. And a lot of you really enjoyed it too. And I've had a lot of folks asking for more stuff like this that goes really a little bit more out there. And I think perhaps there's room for that kind of thing, maybe once a month for me, because we go into it, including, you know, things like Jesus being extraterrestrial. That was a weird conversation to have, not one I'm unfamiliar with, but not really one I've had too often before. Ancient civilizations, censorship in China, notable UFO encounters in China, and a whole lot more. Really interesting one. So let's hear it from Samuel Chong. So often people ask me to get perspectives on the UFO topic from outside of the United States. And here we are, we're going to talk all things UFOs with a conversation rooted in a little bit of religion, a little bit of spirituality.
Back then, China was fairly open in terms of the public to know about or the energy works on unidentified flying objects, the flying saucers, and also things about spirituality. So a physicist was being taken by the ETs to their spacecraft. And then the physicist was told that even though Einstein laid the three fundamental principles of physics, there's one small mistake that made people believe that we cannot cross a light barrier. China was fairly open to translating articles on UFOs into Chinese language. And then there was a very famous magazine in China called UFO Magazine, Feidie Tanso, exploring the UFO phenomena. And it was very, very popular among the But in the early 2000s or so, because of certain religious movements in China, the government started to become more strict in censoring documents or articles or books related to the gong or the energy practices, exercises that the Chinese public did in the past. For example, there was an incident in northeastern part of China in which a farmer was in touch with the ET, and then he had encounter with the ET, and he claimed that the ET actually impregnated him, and then he impregnated the ET, and then causing a baby to be born. There was also another person in China who claimed that he was taken by ETs to a planet called the Guoke planet, and then he wrote books, and then was quite popular in China for his stories. A book was translated into Chinese in which it became massively popular, and people believed the stories to be true, and I think it actually caused a quite different mentality to the people who read the books, in which I think the Chinese mentality began to change and towards more like the spiritual and also other aspects of their belief systems. Wanted such information, wanted such knowledge, wanted such stories of ET contacts, but couldn't find anything. And then this book came into the Chinese market as a fiction, science fiction. But it's still real that people who read the book immediately began to feel that this is not a science fiction. And they went to their planet and then came back with knowledge and specific verifiable facts that convinced them to be true.
Am I correct? In China, given the censorship issues there, it's published under a science fiction label, which allows it to escape some of that more extreme or harsh censorship. Whereas outside, for example, in Taiwan, it's published under non-fiction.
Well, it happened in 1987 in Keynes, Australia, in which the author woke up in the middle of the night. He didn't know why, but he wrote a note to his wife saying that he'll be gone for 10 days and there's absolutely no need to worry about him. And then he walked outside of his house and then he was lifted up to the middle of the air where he met or encountered a very beautiful, gigantic, very tall, wearing space suit. So this actually explains why there are so many planes and ships missing in near the Bermuda Triangle area, and why there are so many people who disappear or vanish in some of the spots in national parks in the US or Canada, as reported or documented by David Politis, called the Missing 411 series of books.
Now, you're a lawyer, Samuel, and that's someone who is trained to weigh evidence and think critically for a job. What convinced you personally that the experiences described within the book are credible and worth your time? The Star of Bethlehem was some kind of orb or UFO. That's what the wise men followed. That's why they could follow it. It wasn't a star really high up in the sky. It was far lower down.
Real involvements, because the book actually tells the history of mankind on Earth. We did not evolve from apes or gorillas at all. We all came from different planets and landed on the continent that existed before in the Pacific Ocean called Lemuria, or the continent of Mu, and establishing a very successful civilization. The continents of Lemuria and Atlantis disappeared almost overnight because of natural catastrophe. The continents sank into the ocean almost overnight. That's actually due to ET's intervention. The ETs, specifically from Jehovah, they caused the Germans delay in developing the atomic bomb, so the U.S. government was able to deploy the bomb in Japan, ending the World War II much earlier than if it didn't happen. The reason he moved from Keynes, Australia to Vietnam was that he really couldn't, after being shown, after being lived in a very perfect world, perfect just like paradise, he really couldn't bear with the things that happened on Earth. The Great Pyramid of Egypt was definitely not a tomb of the pharaohs. According to the ETs, they told Michelle that the pyramid of Egypt was actually an energy center built by a great, wise, learned person from Atlantis. Because he had the knowledge, he was able to use anti-gravitational technologies and supersonic vibratory systems to cut the huge stones in a very precise manner, so that he was able to align the huge stones perfectly so that it can capture the terrestrial and cosmic energies. When the time is right, they can be opened. And when they're opened, everything will be known. China, with this population size, with the size of the population, there's a grassroots movement of awakening up to the spiritual aspect of certain things. Have you ever wondered why we have not gone back to the moon for the last 50 years? The reason is that we are warned off from the moon. Because, China in the recent years especially did have a lot of kind of UAP phenomena over there. And they were actually shot by the citizens over there. The most common shapes would be like, not triangular shape, but either spherical or kind of like changing shapes. Well, the media does not report anything related to ET contact at all, even though there's a very popular Chinese person, or actually there are several Chinese people who claim to have ET contact. The government doesn't really say anything at all. The Chinese government media policy, they do not report on this kind of phenomena at all. don't foresee any whistleblowers from China speaking up, because if the government has a secret research on the UFOs, reverse engineering their technologies, it would be under strict control. It implies that the industrial complex that we are facing against is not a national industrial complex. It's an international coalition. It's not, like, to them, there's no concept of the borders. It's them. They would have members from different countries. Well, it depends whether the person is brainwashed by the scientists or not, or by the textbooks or not. To the people, to the general public, Chinese people would believe encounters or scenes of UFOs or UAP. The conversation would, depends on who you talk to, would go like, oh yes, I believe that I had encounters in the past, I had dreams about it in the past, or it's nonsense.
So seeing the official party organ of the Communist Party in China soberly discussing a topic that our own government and media has so soundly and consistently dismissed as paranoid fantasy was startling, to say the least.
And I think waking up at the grassroots level is going to become more effective than the official disclosure. Do not expect the governments to disclose everything or anything that would change the ways of people's lives. Expect something at the grassroots level. And the grassroots movement will be effective in China and elsewhere in the world. They wouldn't necessarily want to, like, take the time to disclose something that wouldn't have any tangible effect to the stability of the country. There were actually not just one incident. There were several incidents in which the airports of China were shut down because of UFO or UAPs in the sky. And
the encounter of lumberjack, and excuse my pronunciation here, Meng Zhaoguo in Heilongjiang province.
Yes, I believe that's a credible account of what happened to him, Mr. Meng. He actually encountered UFO in the forest of northeastern part of China, and he had some kind of effects for diagnosis of radiation effects. I came from the back of the moon, the far side of the moon, and then, like, there were also exchanges of conversation in which asked how did he get here, or what were they doing in the back of the moon, and that person said they were building some structures in the back of the moon.
Great speaking to Samuel, and I wonder, have you bought the book yourself, The Teabao Prophecy, and what do you think of it? What are your thoughts on that really speculative side of the subject? I'd be really keen to hear from you. Next up, almost no introduction required again for the wonderful Mr. Bryce Zabel. Bryce came on and really candidly discussed his parting of the ways with Ross Coulthart, co-host formerly of Need to Know, along with him, of course now replaced by Richard Dolan. And he talked about current projects, challenges in collaborating, reflections on the industry, and also UFOs and public interest. Always great to listen to Bryce talk. And here's just a taste of what I had in terms of conversation with Bryce.
Well, I mean, the short Cliff Notes thing is literally that I started out in journalism. I was a broadcast journalist trained in college, and worked in local news as an anchor and a reporter, and ended up at CNN in Los Angeles, where that was my best. I think I was the youngest correspondent in the world at that time. Not true today, of course. And then a funny thing happened. I thought, well, I'm going to end up moving around the world trying to be an anchor man in various markets. And my wife said, have you ever read a screenplay? And I hadn't. And I said, if people are going to keep paying me to do this, I'm going to keep doing it. And so here I am almost 25 years later, still doing it. So, yeah. And so I have semi-specialized in science fiction and UFO projects, but not completely. And I'll just leave you with this thought. The one thing that I'm very excited about right now is I have a movie scheduled to shoot early next year in Italy. It's called The Last Battle, and it's about the last battle of World War II in Europe. And very excited, and it has nothing to do with UFOs. Andy, don't you wish that you actually were paid to promote all the things people suspect you're paid to promoting? It's maddening. I mean, the only time I ever get any money from anything is I put ads in a podcast. You know, I don't paywall anything. It's too complicated for me. I just show up and see what happens. So I wish Ross the best. And honestly, it was a gift to work with Ross Coulthart. Okay, he's super talented. He's super informed. He's hardworking. He's a terrific journalist. His opinion is valid. I respect his opinion and I valued it. And it was just very hard to keep, getting it done. I'm thrilled that Richard could step in. And it's a different show. Shows are defined by the people who are on them. You can have all the content distinctions you want in mind for like, well, what is this show going to be? What is it really about? But then you put real world people into it, you get a different show, and it was like being chained to a tree in a hurricane. You just got to hang on I really had to bring my game up to play on that playground with him. Fantastic. Rich is a different guy. In fact, I always thought that the show actually was kind of elevated when Ross and I might disagree about something, right? Because it was like, yeah, we shouldn't all be nodding to each other. This is a mystery. It's a large, grand mystery. And all of us, yourself included, and the people who are listening today, are all chasing the facts of this mystery in our own way. I look at that technology and what I understand about it and say, that feels very anomalous to me. And so quite often, I'll write the first draft of a script, but man, I mean, I get notes from directors, from executives, from studio executives, girlfriends. I mean, everybody gives you a note, and so the idea that somebody would question something you did or that doesn't invalidate friendship or work relationships. There are times it just takes so much energy to stay current. And, like I said, I do other things. I write feature films and I develop TV series and, I write books and, I do other things. And so the energy to be up to date on the UFO issue is very strong sometimes, what's needed. And there are times when I feel burned out and I just go, I don't know if I can do this. It's big. It's going to be controversial. And I should be able to talk about it within the month. So I'll send you a text when that happens. But like right now, I'm not at liberty because the contract just got signed and they don't want people talking about it yet. September is a particularly strange month for me because that's when they do the Emmys. But it isn't just one Emmy show. There's always the primetime Emmys. That's the one everybody sees. But the week prior to that, there are two Creative Arts Emmys where they honor the people that are below the line and everybody from makeup and hair to, production design. So those are three major shows. Then there are these parties. And the thing is, I'm not complaining. I'm blessed that I get to go to them, but they all hit you all at the same time. I'm not the young guy I used to be. I still get tired and I go, oh my God, do I have to go to the Emmys tomorrow? So unless you're sitting with somebody during the commercial breaks where you have a lot of time to talk, not usually, but I will also point this out. When I was chairman, I got to sit with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg on the year that they won for Band of Brothers. But of course, you're sitting next to Steven Spielberg, who's Mr. UFO, and yet it never came up because I just felt like, he's here to win an Emmy for his war movie, and he doesn't really need me to be hitting him up about UFOs. We've had whistleblowers and hearings and things like that. So hard to say. I wish them the best. I hope they find a way to get it distributed. I tend to think that if they haven't gotten it distributed, it's not because of the topic. It's not like somebody is like, oh, UFO, no, don't do that. But Andy, I just got to tell you, I do not believe, for the people who think, oh, it's got to be interference, I just don't buy that. Hollywood, if it's showing anything, has been, they'll make a movie about almost anything if they think that they'll profit from it. And this doesn't apply just to Hollywood. This applies to the film industry where you are. I mean, films and TV get made because people are going to watch it, and in one way or another, advertising or something is going to pay for it.
And it is not, it was shelved. It's not coming out. It's not going to see the light of day. And it's been binned.
Yeah.
And I don't think Age of Disclosure had anywhere near a budget into the hundreds, tens of millions of dollars. And yeah, these things go away for various reasons.
You know, listen, that's an extreme example, because the truth is, most times if you spend $100 million on something, you're going to finish it and you're going to put it out. The only reason that explains that one, though, is when you're talking about Batgirl, you're also talking about Batman, and you're talking about DC Comics, and you're talking about Warner Brothers. And there's a lot of brand protection packaged into that.
I'd love to know your take on the testimony that was provided, and also your view of the video that was shown. There was two videos, but the video, the Hellfire missile video, right, which has become rather controversial. What's your take on where things are a few weeks on?
Well, that's I think that is a tough question, because, I mean, I've seen the video. You've seen it. A lot of people have seen it. Contrast that with how the American nation dealt with Watergate in the 70s, right? That was a Senate investigation, and it was on every day. I mean, people were watching it like a TV series, and everybody came in and testified, and you could draw your own conclusions. I would say start hearings on UFOs and keep them going, right? Let all the people that have spoken for 45 minutes speak for 4 hours, right? It's not perfect. We haven't gotten there 100% yet. But, you know, let's say that a piece of smoking gun video, real smoking gun, not like, okay, this is gun camera footage and we think this is being hit by a Hellfire missile. I'll get people in theaters. That'll get them to their TV sets. That'll change everything. I mean, all these networks and cables and everybody who's got journalism that looks like it's on its last legs is going to be invigorated when something like that happens. And you'll be doing your share of interviews on those shows, I predict. You see talk about Kennedy basically thinking he might do exactly what we said he might do in Dark Skies. And I've kind of looked at that and said, I don't know what to make of that. And he was all about saying that the big picture is in the little detail. And time and again, Stan would prove that you could find things by just being patient. So he would sit his ass down at a table, you know, at an archive, and he would read for 10 hours. And then he'd come back the next day and do it again. And so my hat is off to him. It's more than I've done. And I think he learned a lot of things because he did that. So yeah, let's hope more people can do that.
And again, this is right now, Bryce, I feel we're in a little bit of a dip with the UFO topic publicly because the Epstein stuff has overshadowed it. And I've said a million times, when those first hearings happened with Brian Moultrie back 3 years ago, I think it was now, right, 3 or 4 years ago, I was watching it in one room in the kitchen on YouTube, and my wife was watching the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial in the other room. That was getting millions of views, millions of hits. The UFO hearing wasn't. As much as us in the community, the journalists, the podcasters, the bloggers, the folks, the influencers, the people who just keep this up online, the commentators, the fans of the topic,
sure,
are keeping it alive. It's changing direction. It's getting bigger. These objects, multiple objects, are now potentially on a course towards Earth. Now, admittedly, a bit like yourself, Bryce, I've not done a lot of digging into this one because I'm seeing so many different reports and stories. But perhaps there's something to it, and maybe it would take something like that, a real interstellar visitor of non-human origin or not, to really capture the public's attention.
I don't have as many years left on the Earth as I used to, and I'd like to see this thing resolved, and I'd like to see, I see a world that appears to be more, you know, internally divided against itself, not to mention all the external divisions than I'm used to, and I've seen a lot. I just think that the revelation that we're not alone is maybe that'll be the thing that makes us try to get on the same page with each other. And if that's the case, I hope so. I mean, imagine Avi's right, and some telescope next week gives us an image, and it's pretty darn clear it's not a meteor. or a comet. Well, that would be pretty shocking. And that would bring in a discussion. I think about this all the time. One project I am working on that is fascinating from your point of view, I'm sure, is it's called Undeniable, and I'm doing it with Lionsgate. I think the main thing you'd have to ask them first is, why are you here? I mean, I don't, that's because from that flows everything else. If you could get an honest answer from whatever the intelligence is about why they're here, it tells you a lot. What if the answer was, well, we've been here all along? Well, that would be shocking. Or, we're here to save you. That would be shocking. We're not going to tell you. That would be a shocking answer. I mean, I'd like to ask that. Why are you here? Which, by the way, is sort of like saying, what do you want? I've been big on the Betty and Barney case. I've written scenes about it in Dark Skies. I've developed a movie and a TV series about it, which, you know, I've competed with the big boys to see if I can get set up. Haven't succeeded so far. But I will tell you, and actually, I believe Betty and Barney were abducted. It's the Richard Dolan book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, the new edition of it. Neither of these books are perfect because you've got your own opinion of what should be the basic briefing on UFOs, and so do I. But I don't know. I think Dolan has done a really good historical walk through things. He raises all the issues. And I would sort of recommend it to people. If you have friends that need to know more, I'd sort of give them that. But if I had to guess right now, I think it's extraterrestrial still. But I don't know that for a fact. And there's no reason to believe it's only that. It may be sort of some version of all of the above. And that's where I'm coming from these days. That's why I'm a less slavish to, you know, who's the whistleblower of the day and what are they actually going to say? And can we prove this or that about them? Because, and I am convinced, even though I'm an old man right now, by many standards, I'm still convinced that in my lifetime, we are going to come to the realization that we're not alone.
Next up is a brand new guest for me, Dr. Ia Whiteley. And Dr. Whiteley's been recommended to me by multiple guests in the past, including Diana Pasulka, Richard Dolan, Stephen Brown, and more. Now, Dr. Whiteley was really great to speak to, and we talked about space psychology. We talked about her time working with astronauts and pilots, looking at the UFO phenomenon. We talked about human perception, intuition, consciousness, cognition, precognition, really interesting topics. And a lot of these things, I could have gone 4 hours with Dr. Whiteley. We didn't have the time to do that, but we've touched on so many aspects of the topic. Really interesting one. Please go and check it out. And if you haven't checked out the full interview yet on that one, definitely one that some of you, I think, may have slept on. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. Over to Dr. Ia Whiteley.
So through martial art, I was exposed or lucky where I found out that I could sense things that other people couldn't. And they were not outside, I would say, scientific realm. It's just ability to observe and being aware. And you would rely more on your feelings of the wind, you know, as the people are moving about, you're listening, you become more audio spatially acute as well. It's something more to that. And that's what drove me to explore more. And of course, people who do extraordinary jobs in extraordinary environments, astronauts, yeah, actually is an epicenter for UFO experts, not necessarily the activity, but I grew up with the knowing that it exists. We're human, so we do misinformation or misinterpret and also make our own judgment. And as we all grow up with our own wants and needs or what habits that we don't want to change, there was a host of pilots that did not want to accept Airbus. And there were those pilots who, you know, would embrace, especially a new generation, would be very interested in flying Airbus. And hence, we had aircraft crash nearly every week, commercial flight, which is horrific. Because of that. And some of them were tragic and some of them were incidents. And there were many more incidents, and pilots were afraid to talk about this because so the discussions in the pubs and behind start taking place, and the word start getting out saying it's not the pilot error. And the problem was the pilots were underreporting the problem. They did not know what was happening in a way. They understood, but they couldn't explicate correctly. But also they couldn't articulate what was the problem because they couldn't fault themselves and they couldn't fault the aircraft. And I understood that what we have in cognitive engineering books saying of how we think and how we make decisions is actually not at all like that. We're not following decision tree. And then the ghost in the cockpit started to disappear in a way because they started to understand what they were processing, what they were missing, and we could unravel the puzzle. These people choose this job because it is that, because of this novelty, because of challenges, because they could learn a lot, because they can operate novel technology. Actually, novel, not everything in space. Some of it is very archaic because it's reliable. But the circumstances and technology surrounding it, or people who are thinking forward and contemplating of potential scenarios that may go wrong, is what on your mind all the time. Such as with pilots as well. They always consider, so all engineers and all the pilots and all the mission control always think, you know, what could go wrong? How can we prevent it?
How often does the subject of unexplained phenomena come up when you're speaking to pilots or astronauts particularly? Is that something that you can have a conversation about? Are you expected to have a conversation about? You mentioned, obviously, being there at NASA as well. Do UFOs come up?
So people are very quiet if they're struggling with something, if it might affect them. So they will talk either hush-hush or to their friends and colleagues. And that's how, why I was comparing the problem why we had ghosts in the cockpit, because they were afraid to speak up because they would have lost their job.
And it's interesting, you hear, obviously, pilots being scared to report it. They don't want to lose career progression. They don't want to have their colleagues diminish them. They don't want to be laughed at.
We wrote a paper, which has only just been approved. It took that long to get it down. We did have some conference papers, but this is an official white paper that's published on the website with our suggestions as a team of experts. We even have a medical professional as part of the team. We have also air crew as part of that team who had had their own experience of UAP while flying and were told not to do. So the people who actually went through the process themselves as air crew. And often you do come across those experiences when people hear somebody else's and they say, oh, that makes sense. Now I can relate to what has happened. And but also our mind is very protective of us. But because the pilots are so alert and they're trained to watch more than you and I don't know if you fly, but if we are bound by Earth, we actually don't see objects when we get into the aircraft or when we are passengers. We scan like that. But the pilots don't have blinkers. They see, you know, the sphere. They see the objects right round. But if you are cruising, for example, you know, cross Atlantic or Pacific flight, you have time. So that's when you could look, you know, towards Big Dipper, which is a lot of activities apparently could be happening around the Big Dipper. Choosing the person that you can tell authentically is the key.
So from a cognitive psychology perspective, how reliable is human perception when observing or reporting extraordinary phenomena?
I'd say very reliable because these are experts, observers. I think we're very gifted, I would say, or we're very lucky as community to have these experts sharing what they're seeing or experiencing.
But is there any element of preparing? This is very speculative, but what if they did come into contact with something non-human?
This is actual words of astronauts, is when they walk up to the rocket, they feel they're superheroes. They're better than superheroes. During crisis, most important is not to freeze, because it's not flight or fight, it's freeze first. And by having that experience of knowing what to do, at least first three steps, or at least even one step would be sufficient to walk out from that freeze zone. Not just respond, but be effective in that, or efficient. We know now some of the phenomena interacts with us in feeling sense. So what do you do with that? We're not trained how to deal really with our experiences that flood us chemically, you know, the emotions that we only train that ourselves throughout our life. But maybe fear is not even the problem. You know, what if you're overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude and love and connection? And we know that with Jake Baber, who described that, and he felt that he's actually maybe not fit to fly.
And this is something we hear about when people are talking about non-human intelligence, UFOs and aliens, that perhaps entities are connected psychically, telepathically to a craft, and that's how they operate it.
You are so much above the ground suddenly, but you still connect to the ground and you still feel your feet or those little wheels still part of you connecting to the ground. You're almost feeling it with your feet because you're feeling the airframe moving. And that feeling makes you feel as if you are an aircraft. You have to go sit down and go through these touchdown landings, let them go wrong, you know, get the crosswind, and slowly you will be coached when we're more like children in our perception, but not discounting our experience, of course, but seeing things for what they are, then our mind doesn't color it. We've got very busy life and we discount a lot of beauty as a result, because maybe dogs know what they all thinking. We don't know that still, right? So we don't know if for them it's strange that you and I can't read each other's thoughts, that they'll be standing in front of us and we'll have a completely different thing, you know, thinking, and there'll be no crossover. And that feeling of having relaxation or exhalation came from is that every one of those particles or beings or light knew what all of us knew. I wish that people experience this feeling that you don't need to hide anything ever again. And we will all be so much better as humanity.
But other cultures, depending where you are in the world, don't see these ideas as being as silly or incredible as perhaps folks in the West would. And that they're much more open to, well, yeah, these are just, you've got a physical reality and a non-physical reality, and you can access different elements of those. The idea that children don't arrive for us to shape them as adults, but for the children to shape us.
They're really asking us, does it really exist? Do you still believe in it? And it's a beautiful time to reevaluate, is that actually true? Having a child born, I would say it's probably similar for some people as having an overview effect for an astronaut, because they change your reality of what matters. It's our opportunity to reevaluate and open our eyes to what the universe is actually like and what could we be like. And if we, our children are being born and astronauts going to space and extraordinary environments that we put ourselves in, the book is really a storytelling of these journeys of people, and it's touching different cultures and touching different phenomena on Earth, which we assume or take it for granted, because forcing somebody, you know, in front of what they want to see, it could be devastating for them too. There is a reason why they don't want to hear it. So it's that much we don't know. And think of our volume, of our volume of our mind. We don't even know where our mind is, you know, where our thoughts rest. I would go into martial art mode in regards to not for defensiveness, but in terms of perceptual mode of listening, or maybe even better to say as a Korean medicine therapist or as a breathwork, you know, therapist, where I am purely present. Yes. No, cephalopods, because they had a head.
That's the one,
cephalopods, and she is just curious, exploring, and she removes, in a way, it's symbolic, but she removes all the gear that she's wearing to actually feel with her hands and be as she are.
That was the wonderful Dr. Whiteley. And finally, over to my most recent interview with Kai Dickens. Kai Dickens, of course, the creator of the viral hit The Telepathy Tapes, which overtook Joe Rogan as the number one podcast in the world last year. Season 2 just released on the 15th of October, and we previewed what was to come in that second season. Great to speak to Kai. I hope you've checked out The Telepathy Tapes Season 2. And here we go. Here is some highlights from that interview with Kai, and that'll be the last clip from this highlight show. Please let me know what you thought of it. Thanks for listening. People probably don't understand how difficult it is to get into a podcast chart, stay in a podcast chart, let alone get to the point of knocking Joe Rogan off his top spot.
What I thought, I was like building a wagon in my garage and it became like a rocket ship, you know, and then it was like, oh my gosh, like we have to build this rocket ship as it's blasting off. It's just an exciting time to be on this planet and be a part of it all. And it's not like I don't want to make the most I can out of this moment, you know? So I want to make sure to like, okay, if people are listening, I want to make a season 2 that is worthy of their ears and their minds and their hearts. For many people, it's like, that's a secret that's been hidden in plain sight that many people have been talking about for years, be it scientists, be it experiencers. Is it consciousness playing with us in some way? Is it, we don't know, but in a similar way, for decades, you know, parents, teachers, paraprofessionals, therapists, principals, siblings, rabbis, ministers, all over the world have been experiencing, and scientists, and noting this phenomenon of non-speaking individuals seemingly being able to not just read minds, but have other gifts, you know, and it's, you know, there's been so much confusion around it because the people that are experiencing it, it's not even really about autism as much as it is non-speaking apraxia, which is this mind-body disconnect. Individuals who don't know they have a body sometimes, don't feel their body, don't know where their arm is, don't know where the hand is, and have a very hard time with fine motor skills. I think the number one message now that folks were starting to listen to non-speakers was one of love and unity, that we're all connected. So the people that we focused on in the Telepathy Tape Season 1 were non-speakers with apraxia.
After we spoke last time, I had a few listeners get in touch who have children who are either non-verbal or various different conditions or life-limiting conditions. Some of them had passed on. And it's such a difficult subject, I'm sure, to approach, because one, you're dealing with children and families that have very difficult circumstances in many cases. It must be difficult for parents with non-verbal children, because they have a want and a craving to have something as simple as a conversation with their child, like me. But of course, through what you see in Season 1, for me personally, there is so much to this that points to this there being a truly genuine, I don't even know if phenomenon is the real word to use, because it just seems like something perhaps it's more natural than we realize.
Well, I think too, right, like I think a lot of the skeptics around spelling have never ever worked with a speller or, you know, met teachers or practitioners who are using the method. And I think it just takes going and sitting with an individual to realize, oh, yes, they're pointing very quickly to letters. Oh, you can read with your finger? That sounds impossible. You can write by typing dots and someone can read it with their finger? This is not new for a group of people who are missing a sense, be it sight, be it speech, be it hearing, to be told you're not smart, You're not in there. You can't possibly communicate. They find a way to communicate. And this young girl was a non-speaker. And one of the first things she started communicating was medicinal cures of plants. And she says she can hear them via telepathy, that the plants can communicate, or I don't know what's exactly happening, but she was properly identifying people's ailments and then offering herbal cures through like random Chinese herbs, like astragalus or something that no one in the family knew about. Oh my God, the sentence is absolutely astounding.
And I think people listening to this or watching this are used to it with the UFO topic, remote viewing, paranormal, if they're into ghosts, Bigfoot, all that kind of stuff. There's always an element of ridicule, ignorance, mm-hmm. lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, stigmatism attached to all of these different subjects.
Season one was my effort to bring this quote-unquote secret that's been hiding in plain sight to the world, right? And, you know, so many of these things were happening with parents all the time. They'd hide Halloween candy, and the second they thought of where it was, their kid would, you know, boom, to, you know, run toward it. Why would we take away their spelling support when we could just put the person sending the cue in a way different room so that no one in the other room knows what the cue is? He had created this triple blind computers thing where like someone, a scientist or the study leader could hit a button and they don't know what's being sent. He describes the video perfectly. He describes the word on the screen. I mean, what is the chance of getting, I mean, it's like quadrillions to one. I can't even imagine the odds of getting that right. The question is no longer does telepathy exist? Are these kids capable of it? That's, I think, been settled with the science in the past year.
Telepathy is real.
I realize that I'm seeing with my eyes, like all that's kind of happening around us to like fake people out that their kids are actually communicating when parents have tried so many things that don't work. They're always walking away from what doesn't work and don't want to hope. Not everyone will believe. Not everyone believes the earth is round, you know? Half Americans didn't believe Trump won an election and half do. Like, there's always going to be things that people do or don't believe in based on your own worldview, based on the facts that you're consuming, based on what you want to be true or not want to be true. I couldn't hire a staff and have them come around with me. I couldn't hire film crews and have them watch if it was all fake and lies.
A psychic chat room where they can go to and they're maybe not confined by the bounds that they have physically day to day. But this idea that they aren't alone, that they can go to this place and literally psychically connect with friends who are across cities, countries, that must be really, really a really nice feeling for the parents.
And so the first episode of season one does not have a non-speaker in it, but it leads into the second episode that does. And one of the stories in that episode is about a young girl who had been talking about many friends that her mom couldn't find. And it was remarkable because so many non-speakers started finding each other in real life due to their parents trying to validate this. And it was jaw-dropping for some of these parents to realize that the hill was real. The idea of them jamming out telepathically in a chat room called the hill is a different thing to wrap your head around.
Listening to anything, podcasts are my go-to on a daily basis more than visual.
Spontaneous, urgent, necessary telepathy has been captured to such an degree of accuracy accidentally in a kind of a quote-unquote lab setting. No one could censor it or tell us what we had to put in or what we couldn't put in.
And then mm-hmm. to say to a parent, oh, can I check and see if your child is psychic? Do you mind? That must take a lot of time.
Then I kept saying to so many of them, yes, please study this, but it's up to you to earn the trust. It's not up to me to earn your trust. And we had to wait until some found funding. And the other thing that was interesting is once they found funding, I think they realized really quickly they had to not just make inroads and create relationships that were trusting, not with just non-speakers, but with their parents or with their teachers or with the school or with whatever, wherever they're going to do these tests, and that it could take months of figuring out how things work, what makes them tick, you know, to do the trial. And then only then can you do the experiment. And he was like, I wish I knew how I could help you go to the bathroom quicker. Because it took her 30 minutes. And she's like, okay, just ask me. But he's like, what? I know she can't talk. What is this? And it was in his mind. And then she went through with like showing him images in his mind, like telepathically, of how to help her go to the bathroom quicker. It seems like some of these abilities, telepathy, The ability to like astral project can turn on most deeply when you are in, when you lose the faculties of your regular brain. And what does that mean about consciousness? If you believe you're going to do a great job and you have a really good attitude when you're going to go out play your basketball game or do your piano recital, you're probably going to do better. The force of love.
And I think, to be fair, and it's probably a different conversation for a different day, a huge aspect of why these types of gifts and abilities are likely suppressed is the fact that they would be weaponized by modern day.
And I do believe that the world is conscious and that ideas even have their own consciousness and will, and they are looking for people to help make them manifest. When you truly surrender and kind of let yourself be manhandled by this gift or whatever it is, but by ideas or by inspiration, it will show you what it wants to make manifest. Yes, I think most will say that consciousness is fundamental, that, you know, the metaphysical world is almost more real than our physical world. They're looking at the screen, but he can see behind it. He can see the inner workings, and he explains it, how it all works.
That's all for this episode of That UFO Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If you enjoyed the show, please follow, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps others find the show. If you're watching on YouTube, hit like, subscribe, and turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. You can also support the show directly and get early access, ad-free episodes, and bonus content on Patreon or by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube membership. All the links are over at thatufopodcast.com or in the show description below, along with merchandise and more. Don't forget, you can also pick up a copy of my book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, available now in all good bookstores and through online retailers, including Amazon. Big thank you again to all of you for listening and tuning in. Until next time, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little Rhinos.